land. Oh, that's my cue. It's the roundtable on WAMC, 10 minutes after 10 o'clock. Yeah, it's a Tuesday, and every Tuesday at this time, we get our book picks for the week. And this week's book picks come from our good friends at Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York, Connie Brooks and Kate Reed. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you.
As you know, Joe has a little cough today, so right. I'm going to handle this for him.
All right.
Excellent. And I know he's listening, so there's no pressure at all.
All right. We'll make it easy on you.
So what's new at the bookshop?
So a lot of new things up at the bookstore, and I have a really fun list to talk about.
Oh, good.
So I'm going to start with A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. And a few years ago, Towles published The Rules of Civility, which channeled 1930s Manhattan beautifully and remains one of my favorite novels. Now in his new book, A Gentleman in Moscow, Towles immerses us in another elegantly drawn era in a story about a man who is ordered to spend the rest of his life inside a luxury hotel. And you may ask why. So the story centers on Count Alexander Rostov, who in 1922 is deemed an unrepentant aristocrat by a Bolshevik tribunal, and is sentenced to house arrest in the Metropole, a grand hotel across the street from the Kremlin. So though his life is spared, the hotel becomes both Rostov's home and jail. Forbidden to leave the confines of the hotel, Rostov's world is limited to fellow hotel guests and staff, who become variously his friends, enemies, lovers, and confidants. The press of Russian history happening outside of his door is felt by Rostov, but his is a kaleidoscopic view, fractured, shifting, and obscured. In short, A Gentleman in Moscow is marvelous.
Happy ending or sad ending? Will you tell us?
No, I won't tell you. But he undergoes over the course of 30 years, he's in his 30s when he goes in. He's there for 30 years, so he changes. He undergoes great change.
That's a fascinating concept.
I know. Next, I have another novel, and this is Leave Me by Gail Forman. And this is Forman's first novel for adults. Her previous novels, including her best-known If I Stay, have been young adult bestsellers. In a story reminiscent of Anne Tyler's Ladder of Years, we meet Maribeth Klein, a magazine editor and supermom. In fact, Klein is so busy taking care of her husband and preschool twins that she doesn't even realize it when she's having a heart attack. She finds herself at age 44, recovering from emergency bypass surgery and facing the overwhelming need to flee her family. She retreats to Pittsburgh using cash from her savings account. Then, so as to remain undiscovered for as long as possible, she relies on the old-fashioned yellow pages, the local library, and a pay-as-you-go cell phone as she begins to search for her birth mother and unanswered questions from her past.
So this is her first adult novel?
First adult novel. I've loved her young adult. She's just wonderful. She gets characters really, really well, but she decided she wanted to write about people her age this time.
So. Was the transition successful?
I think so. Yeah, I do. Good. I do. I loved Ladder of Years, which Anne Tyler wrote years and years and years ago, and this has the same great feel to it. So I like it.
Kate is nodding, so yes. Okay. We have consensus here.
I'm on radio,
panel.
Yes. Okay, right.
Next, I have a very different type of novel, and this is Little Nothing by Marissa Silver. Silver's new novel is part allegory and part subversive fairy tale about a girl scorned for her physical deformity, whose salvation lies in her otherworldly ability to transform herself and the world around her. In an unnamed country at the beginning of the last century, a child called Pavla is born to peasant parents. Her birth stuns her parents and brings outrage and scorn from her community, for Pavla has been born a dwarf. When her parents turn to the treatments of a local charlatan, his terrifying cure opens the floodgates of persecution for Pavla. Her reaction to a world that visits pain and confusion on her is to transform and shapeshift, not as an evasion of her pain, but as transcendence over it. Like all good fairy tales, Pavla's tale gets under your skin because it seems eerie and strange, at the same time that it seems uncannily familiar and hauntingly close to home.
Mm.
And then I switch to two nonfiction, and the first of those titles is The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel and How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. This is by Peter Wohlleben. It was first published in German, and it's already an international bestseller. And it asks the paradigm-shifting question, are trees social beings? Forester and author Wohlleben convincingly makes the case that the forest is indeed a social network. He draws on groundbreaking scientific discoveries to describe how trees are like human families. Tree parents live together with their children. They communicate with them. They support them as they grow. They share nutrients with other trees who are sick or struggling, and even warn each other of impending dangers. It's a fabulous natural history book.
Okay, I must read this because I think it's a little stretch.
It's don't judge until you've read it, but it will absolutely change everything you thought you knew.
Okay, because tree parents living near the kids, I mean, they're not moving around, right?
No. The kids don't go very far.
I'm not moving to Buffalo, all right? I'm staying right here in the forest. Interesting book, though. All right, so that one will be on my list.
Okay, great. And then I have a fun cookbook. This is Fika, The Art of the Swedish Coffee Break,
nice.
With recipes for pastries, breads, and other treats. This is by Anna Brons and Johanna Kindvall. And anyone who's ever visited Sweden, which I unfortunately have not, knows that the Swedish take fika, a twice daily coffee break, very seriously. Now there's a cookbook to help out those of us who want to bring the fika tradition to America. Bronze's and Kinball's charming cookbook shares many recipes for traditional fika treats, such as cinnamon buns and ginger snaps, as well as information on many of the customs associated with fika.
All right, so how many cookbooks do you reckon you're either pitched or receive at the bookstore a year?
Oh, hundreds.
Really?
Hundreds.
Okay, and how many of those even raise an eyebrow with you two? How many do you say, oh, all right,
in
another cookbook?
A year, 100?
Maybe three.
Really? So there are three that stand out to you?
Yeah. This is one.
Really?
And
this is worth
one.
It?
And this is one. And I've cooked from it. You've had family cook from it.
And I've eaten from it.
Yes.
Really? So it's good?
It's good. It's good.
You know, but two coffee, I mean, how can an American take two coffee breaks in one day?
I think we should do it.
I mean, in radio, we're lucky to get lunch.
Yeah, well, there you go.
See, you need fika.
I like it. Oh, I got some coffee right here. All right, now, Kate Reed, it's your turn.
Okay, I have three children's books to share with our listeners today. And the first is the picture book Ada Twist Scientist, done by the team Andrea Beatty and illustrated by David Roberts. As a baby, Ada is very alert. And as the story begins, we find that Ada Marie, said not a word till the day she turned three. And as a toddler, she silently investigates everything that she can get her hands on, leaving a trail of chaos behind. Until one day, Ada climbs to the top of a grandfather clock to her parents yelling, "Stop!" And then the questions start. Why does it tick? Why does it talk? Why don't we call it a granddaughter clock? And as Ada grows, the questions get more involved and broader in their scope, leading to more questions, a hypothesis or two, and hands-on investigating, especially around smells and their sources. Ada Twist Scientist is fun, fast-moving, and done in rhyme, if you haven't gotten that before. And Andrea Beatty and David Roberts have collaborated previously on Rosie Revere Engineer and Iggy Peck Architect, but I think that Ada Twist Scientist is my favorite.
You know, I've read a lot of children's books over the last 14 years.
Yes.
and remembering when I was a kid, they seemed very, very simple. Have children's books become more sophisticated?
I think that they've become more sophisticated in their topics, but the research has shown that we've actually decreased the number of words on pages. So
maybe I was just a gifted kid.
Yeah,
sure.
Maybe.
My career didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, this is a great book to introduce children as young as three through second grade to the art and importance of asking questions and in developing scientific theory. So it's a good one. And the book, the character is, as a side, her name comes from two famous scientists, Madame Marie Curie and Ada Lovelace, who was a mathematician and the first computer programmer.
Uh-huh.
So there.
Very good.
That's it. A push for women getting into science. And our second book for kids releases today. It's titled Ghost, and it's written by famed graphic novelist Raina Telgemeier, who's done Smile and Sisters and Drama. And in this tale, Telge Meyer weaves a sensitive story of two sisters and their parents who move to the foggy California coastal town of Bahia de la Luna because the younger sister, Maya, suffers from cystic fibrosis. And it's thought that the weather would be beneficial to her. Well, the fog is also beneficial to the sightings of ghosts. And this town with Mexican roots welcomes and celebrates their presence during El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. The importance of friends and family, both living and dead, is brought to life in this book. I read it in one sitting and recommend it for our middle readers.
Very nice.
And our last book is by Newbery Medal winner Patricia McLaughlin, and she wrote Sarah Plain and Tall. Her new book, also just out today, is called The Poet's Dog. And this book is just plain magical. Two children alone in the woods during a snowstorm, found by a poet's dog, brought to the safety of his cabin. The dog speaks, and they understand. And through McLaughlin's words, we feel loss and the experience of love once again. And I admit that I had a tear or two in my eyes while reading this book. And when I finished it, I couldn't wait to share it with Connie.
And I cried too.
Okay, so how many children's or young kids' books do you have to read a year? I asked you this about cookbooks. Now let's find out about kids' books.
Well, the picture books are really easy because as soon as they come in, we're receiving them in the store, I'm flipping through them. Some of the middle school books and the young adults are, you've got to pick and choose a little bit more.
Now, my son reads a lot. He's 8. So this morning he got an early copy of Ghosts by Raina Telge Meyer. So he was sharing his opinions of that with Kate, you know, when we were driving in this morning. And
He got the storyline down.
Oh, he
really
had it.
Well.
That's
totally
helpful, though,
isn't
it? As a marketer, that's helpful.
Oh, yeah, and he'll sell books in the store.
Yes, he's great.
He goes in and tells.
All right, they're child labor laws.
No.
But my point was, of how many, again, with the cookbooks, you said maybe 3 out of 100 you really grabbed you. There are thousands of children's books. How many of those, what percentage are worthy?
Well, that's a hard one, because I am a real stickler on my background is in early childhood education. So I look at them also from an educational point of view, and there are very few that I really, really like.
So if I were to write one about a grizzled newsman with broken dreams and... Maybe that'd be for kids.
Yeah.
Well, this was fun.
But this one, I have to say, is for kids, but it's also for anybody with a poet's heart. So if you've got a poet, because the poet's dog is so lovely, and if you're a poet, you've got to read this, or even if you love poetry.
Well, this was so much fun. Connie Brooks and Kate Reed, thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Ray.
Battenkill Books is located in Cambridge, New York. The website is battenkillbooks.com, and this list posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. And by the way, coincidentally, the roundtable is what you're listening to on WAMC.